as another figure drew near, someone Call recognized, despite the blur. It was Aaron. Aaron, who knelt down beside him. Aaron, who put a cool, calm hand on Call's chest. "I can help him," Aaron said. "What are you going to do?" Tamara asked. Call wondered if she remembered what she had said to him, that Aaron cared about Call because he had a piece of Call's soul inside him. Aaron was a blur, with a halo of light hair. His voice sounded firm, almost like the old Aaron. "Call's not supposed to die. I'm the one who should be dead." Tamara drew in her breath. Call fought to open his eyes wide, fought to say something, to stop Aaron, but then he felt Aaron's hand press against him, and something moved deep in his chest. Suddenly, there was air to breathe again. Something was moving inside his ribcage, something with a light touch, like fluttering wings. He felt it brush his soul. The soul tap. Aaron was doing the soul tap they'd both learned, but how? Aaron wasn't a mage anymore, wasn't a Makar, and why bother? Did he want to know what it was like to feel someone's soul wink out and die?
"What are you doing?" Tamara whispered. "Please don't hurt Call. He's been hurt enough."
Aaron didn't say anything. Call felt it again. The touch deep inside his chest. His injured soul calming. The sense of something being restored to him. Something he'd only now known he was missing. He gasped, and his eyes flew open. The blur was gone from his vision. In fact, everything was irradiated with light. His body jerked.
"He's alive," said Master Rufus in amazement. "Call! Call, can you hear me?"
Call nodded. His head hurt, but he was no longer choking and dizzy. He stared up at Aaron.
"What did you do?"
he demanded.
"I gave you back your soul," Aaron said. "The piece you used to bring me to life. I put it back inside you."
"Aaron,"
Tamara breathed.
"Tamara," Aaron said. "It's all right."
There was a gentleness in his voice Call hadn't heard since Aaron had died. It made him feel like something was expanding inside his chest, something so huge it might crack his ribs open and make him scream. He could almost see the invisible threads connecting him to Aaron. Golden, silken fine threads of soul that stretched between the two of them.
"And the opposite of chaos is the human soul."
Master Graves was babbling.
"But that's impossible. It can't be done. Souls can't be traded back and forth like playing cards."
Call sat up. The battlefield was thick with smoke. Mages were moving back and forth, putting out fires, rounding up the chaos ridden and the traitors. Call saw Jasper's father led away by two burly assembly mages, though he didn't see Kimaya anywhere.
"So I'm okay?"
Call said wonderingly, glancing from Tamara to Aaron to Master Rufus.
"We're both okay?"
But Aaron didn't speak. He was very pale. He still had his arms wrapped around himself as if he was cold.
"Call,"
he said breathlessly. His lips were bluish.
"It was never supposed to be me. I'm not the hero. You're the hero."
Impossibly, he smiled, just the slightest crook of a smile.
It was always you.
Aaron! Call cried, but Aaron had slumped down between him and Tamara. Sobbing, she put a hand on Aaron's shoulder and shook him. But under her hand, he was still. Call felt his own soul thrash desperately toward the golden threads connecting him to Aaron, as though his own soul couldn't bear to let Aaron go. For a moment, the feeling was so intense that Call thought he might pass out again. He concentrated on holding himself together, on pulling in all his energy and his power, on tugging the golden threads to him.
"Aaron's gone,"
Tamara whispered. Call opened his eyes. Aaron looked peaceful, lying on the ground. Maybe this was what was best. Maybe he was supposed to see it that way, but Call was horrified. The idea of losing him and losing Havoc, too, felt like almost too much to bear. Call looked around for his wolf, but Havoc was nowhere to be seen. He wasn't where he'd fallen. Had someone moved his body? He shivered. He wanted his father. He wanted Alistair. He felt gentle hands on him, Master Rufus holding Call by the shoulders. He hadn't remembered Master Rufus being so gentle. But there was nothing but kindness in his touch as he held Call while a group of mages approached with a stretcher and loaded Aaron's body onto it. The ache in his chest wouldn't go away. His head buzzed. There were other groups of mages out on the field, loading other bodies onto stretchers.
"Be careful with him,"
Call said raggedly, as they raised the stretcher with Aaron on it and began to carry his body away.
"Don't hurt him."
"He can't be hurt,"
Master Rufus said softly.
"He's beyond all that, Call."
Tamara was crying softly into her hands. Even Jasper was silent, his face streaked with dirt. Call wanted to get up and run after the stretcher and grab Aaron off it to bring him back to his friends, which was ridiculous, because Aaron was gone. Dead, beyond Call's ability to call his soul back, even if he'd been foolish enough to make such a terrible choice twice. But Call wanted to make sure he got a real burial this time. Even if Call was in prison again, unable to attend it. He thought about the walls of his old cell in the Panopticon. It wouldn't be so bad to be back there now. Maybe it would be restful. Then he remembered the state they'd left the Panopticon in. Well, he was sure there were other mage jails. Probably one of those would do.
"It's all right, Call,"
Master Rufus said, as if he could read Call's thoughts.
"He will get a hero's funeral. Aaron's name will never be forgotten."
A shadow fell over them all.
"Colum, you're going to have to come with me,"
said Assemblyman Graves. He looked as though he'd been disappointed that Call had pulled through.
"Colum isn't going anywhere," Master Rufus said. "He saved us all, and he nearly sacrificed himself to do it. If you try to arrest him, I will encase you in stone. Colum Hunt is a hero, just like Aaron said."
"Yeah," said Tamara. "Touch Colum and I'll burn your fingers off."
Call looked at her in frank amazement. He thought that she understood that he wasn't actually evil, but he figured he'd lost her friendship forever. But when he gave her a wobbly smile, even though there were tears in her eyes, she smiled back at him. And then, out of the crowd, came a barking. Call turned in time for Havoc to bound up to him. Call threw his arms around his wolf's neck and buried his face in the warm fur.
"You're okay,"
he whispered. Then he pulled back to make sure, and staring into Havoc's face, he noticed that Havoc's eyes were no longer coruscating. They were a deep, steady gold. The alkahest must have struck Havoc after all, but instead of killing him, it had taken the chaos from him. Havoc was a regular wolf now. A regular wolf that licked Call's cheek with a pink tongue. Master Rufus and Tamara helped Call to his feet, and as the mages flew over the battlefield, putting out fires and arresting the last of the renegade mages, Call and his friends limped toward where Ravan stood like a flaming column beside the other elementals being prepared for the flight back to the Magisterium. They had almost reached her when Call heard it, a tiny whisper in the back of his head, a voice fond and curious and friendly, so familiar it seemed to punch a hole right through his chest, so familiar he felt the echo of the soul tap all the way through him, and almost stumbled. "I think I really am back this time, Call," Aaron's voice said. "Now what the heck are we going to do?" Epilogue. It was a bright day, and the sun shone down on a small town cradled by mountains. The town had stood for hundreds of years. Its walls were washed by rain and snow to a mellow gold. The light was slanting toward afternoon, and the townspeople were starting to trickle out into the streets to do their evening shopping when the sound of an enormous explosion split the sky. In the space between two mountains, above a valley of green grass, the sky seemed to have torn in half, revealing a terrible blackness. It was a darkness. More than darkness. It was not a lack of light, but a lack of anything at all. It was the void. The animals in the valley began to scatter as a rumbling noise came from inside the void. There was a ripping sound, and then, from the darkness, came Alex Strike, riding on the back of a great metal monster that the mages of the assembly had once named Automatones. Alex was no longer human. He had become a thing the world had never seen before. He had become a devoured of chaos. He was chaos, and chaos lived inside him and flickered behind his black eyes. It crackled in his bones and hair and blood. The silver mask was no longer an independent thing. It had replaced his face, mobile and expressive as his own features had once been. Behind him flowed a river of elementals and animals that had been once consigned to chaos. There were wolves with coruscating eyes and dead-eyed mages holding weapons, and the serpent elemental, Skelmis, hovered over them, hissing and whipping its tail made of air. Alex rode Automatones to the edge of the valley. He looked down into the town below, where the people were already running in the streets like frightened black ants. He held out a hand, and in his palm, chaos coiled like smoke. He smiled. This is Paul Baymer. We hope you have enjoyed listening to this unabridged production of Magisterium, Book 4, The Silver Mask, by Holly Black and Cassandra Clare. This program was directed by Bruce Mann. Executive producer, Sarah Jaffe. Text copyright 2017 by Holly Black and Cassandra Clare, LLC. Production copyright 2017, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.